Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, November the 17th. Well, it's in the evening, but I can tell you it's an absolutely beautiful day here in North Texas once again. But the cool weather is coming from what we're hearing in the reports. The cool weather is coming, and it's supposed to be chilly here for the next several days. I have a post over at the American Thinker Saturday morning that I want to talk to you about. It talks about these recounts in 2018. And what exactly do they mean for 2020? Because I think this is all about 2020 right now for the Democrats. I think they understand that 2018 is what it is. But they're talking, I think they're setting themselves up for 2020. And that's what I wrote about over at the American Thinker. I have a post coming out Sunday looking back at the midterms and looking at both parties. I mean, obviously, both parties have something they can claim victory. But I think both parties have problems, and they better prepare themselves, especially the Republicans who we vote for. We better prepare ourselves for some realities down the road that we're going to have to deal with. But just a word about these recounts, which is just, this is really sick. I just don't know how else to explain it. The Democrat lady who ran, I think her last name is Abrams, who ran for governor in Georgia. She's down 58,000 votes, okay? 58,000 votes out of 4 million. Now, normally you would expect someone losing like that out of 4 million votes to simply say, okay, I concede, congratulations to the other guy, and let's move on. But she said she's not conceding in the formal sense of, you know, accepting defeat and congratulating the winner and moving on. She basically said, well, I don't think I can win, and the reason I cannot win is because the system is corrupt and I want to investigate the system. You know, this is getting, honestly, this is really getting old, this, this game that the Democrats are playing, that somehow if they win, the people speak. You know, if they win, the people speak. On the other hand, if they lose, well, there must be something wrong with the system. This is really getting old. And I don't think this kind of ties into my post this morning over at the American Thinker. I don't think this is just happening for no reason at all. I think what the Democrats are doing in 2018 is preparing what I believe, preparing the way for a situation in 2020 where everything is going to be challenged. Every election is going to be challenged along the lines of vote suppression, racism, whatever other ism they come up with. And basically their attitude is going to be, if we win, the people spoke. If we lose, they stole it from us. And they're going to do that. You're going to see a ton of challenges in 2020, particularly if we have another year of close elections as we did this time. Now, of course, the solution to that is to win elections by 3 or 4 points at least, and then you don't have to worry about challenges. But look at Georgia. I mean, in Georgia, I mean, that was close. I will concede that that was close. But I don't think that was close enough to call for a recount. Even in Florida, you're talking about 12,000 votes separating Nelson and Scott. I mean, Scott's going to win, of course. But the idea that they've put the state through all of this over the last week is frankly quite disappointing. Now, the governor of Governor DeSantis, Governor-elect DeSantis, was, I guess, declared the winner a few days ago. But as I say in my article today at the American Thinker, this is a strategy that the Democrats are sort of putting together. This is like a trial run. You know, this is like when the football team runs plays and in exhibition or in mini camp or in preseason camp, when they try this play or that play to see how it works. And that's what we're watching here. I think you better get ready. I hope the Republicans are ready in 2020 for what will be a ton of challenges against any Republican who wins, particularly in the House, where elections can be can be close. And the challenges are all going to be the same. You know, the election was stolen, vote suppression, and so on and so on. And this is going to be their tactic. And they're sort of working it out right now in 2018. So what do you do? Well, I guess the best thing you can do is win some of these elections by larger margins, which I think could happen in 2020. But nevertheless, it's going to be like this, I think, from now on. Every time a Republican wins, there's going to be a challenge, especially if the election is within two or three points. Let's take a look at 2018, because I have a post coming out about this tomorrow morning. Sunday morning, I should say. One of the things that I believe is that when you look back at this election, when you look at the bottom line of the election, the Democrats won the House. They're going to have a majority anywhere between 15 and 18, depending on how some of these recounts, there's recount again, depending on how some of these recounts in the House come out. Let's say they have 18. They have a margin of 18. That means they'll have like 236 districts. The Republicans would then have 199. It could be 235, 200, something in that range. But they're going to have a margin or a majority of about 16, 17, 18 votes in the House. And that's because they won 37 or 38 seats in the House of Representatives. Now, historically speaking, that's not that big. I mean, Reagan lost 42 in 1982. Clinton lost about 60 in 1994. Obama lost in the high 60s in 2010. So if you look at it from a historical standpoint, yes, it was a loss. Nobody's denying that. Yes, the Republicans need to do better. But when it's all said and done, it was very much under what Republicans or presidents do, incumbent presidents do, in their first year. The only exception to this recently was George W. Bush, President Bush, who actually picked up a few seats in the House and then picked up a few seats in the Senate. So he won in the House and in the Senate. But most of the time, the incumbent president takes a beating in the first election. That's just the way it's been. So in the House, the Democrats are going to have a margin of about 18 votes. In the Senate, when it's all said and done, it looks like the Republicans picked up two seats because they won four. They lost two, so it's a net two. Now, Mississippi is still up. They're going to have their vote, I guess, there on the 27th. That should be a Republican seat. So when it's all said and done, they'll have about 53 votes in the U.S. Senate. So looking at it that way, the Republicans, the Democrats win the House, but they win by a lower number than we've seen recently. And the Republicans win the Senate in a first-term election. What that says to me is that this was not a wave election in any means. This was not the kind of wave election that we saw in 2010 or 1994 or anything like that. So I think both sides have something to be excited about, but I also think both sides have a few concerns and a few things they have to do. The Republicans clearly have to do better with the suburbs. There's no question about that. Republicans have to do better in the suburbs. And the Democrats are going to have to do better with men. You don't hear this so much, but the fact is the Democrats have a serious gender gap with men, and they need to pick those numbers up, or they may not win a lot of elections. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. Let me tell you about my good friend Carlos Geddes. We have a link to his website or his schedule on the show information. If you want to go out and get some good food and enjoy some good music, see where he's playing around town these days. And my good friend Duke Machado, we have a link to him as well. If you're looking for an automobile, click on his link and call him up and see what kind of a deal you can get on your automobile. Let's talk a little bit about something that happened on this day 50 years ago, and we call that the Heidi game. It was 50 years ago today that the Raiders and the Jets took the field in Oakland to play a very important game in what they used to call the AFL. That was in the old days. They had the American Football League and the National Football League. They were completely separate. They didn't play each other at all during the regular season. That eventually ended in the early 70s when the two leagues became one. They, in a sense, became the National Football League, or I guess the National Football League adopted all of the teams from the American Football League, and then you have two conferences right now, and the two conferences, of course, meet in the Super Bowl. But back then, each league was totally independent. The AFL used to be on NBC and the NFL on CBS. So on this day, 50 years ago today, the Jets and the Raiders took the field in Oakland to play an extremely important game in the AFL standings, and it was a great game. It was going back and forth. But at 7 o'clock, NBC, carrying the game at the time, had a commitment to show the movie Heidi. This is the movie that the little girls like a great deal. It's about the little girl in Austria. It's a wonderful movie. My sister grew up watching that, and this is a great movie. But obviously, they took the game off to show Heidi. And the whole country was left without the game, at least men like me back then with my dad and my brother. We were watching the football game, and all of a sudden there's no game, and obviously we weren't too happy about that. So at 7 o'clock, NBC comes on with Heidi, and nobody knows what happened to the game. As it turns out, the Raiders scored twice in the last 95 seconds to win the game, but nobody in the country knew that unless you were living in Oakland or New York where you could pick up the game on the radio. Well, there was so much protest, there was so much outrage, that the NFL, or not just the NFL, but the networks, decided that they were no longer going to do this, that if there was a commitment to show a movie at 7 o'clock, or 60 minutes at 7 o'clock, whatever they had committed at 7 o'clock Eastern time, they were going to stop that. Or basically, they were going to play the game, show you the game until the very last play of the game, until the game was officially finished, and then they would move on to the Disney show or the 60 minutes or whatever show people were waiting on. And that all happened because of this Heidi game 50 years ago that really shook up the networks, because the networks had no idea. Of course, nobody knew what was going to happen in this game. Nobody knew that it would be decided at the last minute by the Raiders scoring twice in the last 90 seconds or something like that. But this is the reason, when you're watching football right now, this is the reason why they will not go to the next program until they have finished the game. It all happened because of this day 50 years ago when the Jets and the Raiders were playing and Heidi interrupted the game. And how can I say it? All hell broke loose, especially in the country. All the guys who were watching this game, it was never the same after that. Well, we say happy number 74 to Tom Seaver, one of the great pitchers in Major League history. We say happy number 80 to Gordon Lightfoot, one of the great songwriters. You know, he wrote that song about, the ship that went down in Lake Superior a few years ago. I can't think of the name right now, but he wrote Sundown. He also wrote If You Could Read My Mind. He also wrote Early Morning Rain. The guy has a tremendous repertoire of songs, and he's 80 years old today. I didn't realize he was 80 already, but Gordon Lightfoot, one of my favorite songwriters as well as performers. He's a rare situation. A lot of songwriters cannot sing, as you know, but he can do it both. It's kind of a rare thing. And we say number 85, happy number 85 to Orlando Pena, he's a rare kind of major leaguer, because there aren't that many pitchers in the major leagues anymore, there aren't that many pitchers, period, who played in pre-Castro Cuba and then later here in the United States. So he's a bit of a collector's item, if you will, in that respect, Orlando Pena. And we also remember today Mike Garcia, who was one of the great pitchers in Major League history, and we remember him because he was part of that 1954 Cleveland Indians team that won 111 games and then got swept in the World Series. What a shock that must have been. They were swept by the Giants in the World Series. Well, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and I guess we'll talk to you later. Good night, everybody.